The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website freshfm.net for our contact details.
Good morning and welcome to the Resilient Show. How are you this morning? What a week it has been. The state funeral of Queen Elizabeth II at the beginning of the week. Did you watch it? Wow. That was, we stayed up until her coffin was transferred to the hearse at the far end of Buckingham Palace, and then it was time for bed. But just to see that pomp and circumstance, that pomp and ceremony that Britain does so well. And now it is a new normal. King Charles III and a new monarchy. Let's see how it goes. But to start the show this morning, I'd just like to say, do you know what? Thank you for the music.
I'm nothing special. In fact, I'm a bit of a bore. When I tell a joke, you've probably heard it before. But I have a talent, a wonderful thing, 'cause everyone listens when I start to sing. I'm so grateful and proud. All I want is to sing it out loud. So I say thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty, what would life be without a song or a dance? What are we? So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me. Mother says I was a dancer before I could walk. She says I began to sing long before I could talk. But I often wonder, how did it all start? Who found out that nothing could capture a heart like a melody can? Well, whoever it was, I'm a fan. So I say thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty, what would life be without a song? For giving it to me. I've been so lucky. I am the girl with golden hair. I want to sing it out to everybody. What a joy, what a life, what a chance. Singing, thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty, what would life be without a song or a dance? What are we? So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me. So say thank you for the music,
Wasn't that just a nice, calm, slow way to bring us into this week's show? Don't worry, we're going to ramp it up in a minute. This is The Resilient Show. I'm Stu Darling, your host for the next, 90 minutes or so. Welcome to the show. If you are listening in Nelson Central Business District, we are on 107.2 FM. If you're in Nelson Tasman, 104.8 FM. If you're over the hill in Golden Bay, you can listen to the show on 95 FM. And if you're down in Blenheim, across in Blenheim, you can listen on 88.9 FM. This is, of course, Fresh FM. So if you are not in any of the aforementioned places, you can go to www.freshfm.net and listen in, either live or you can listen to listen again to the show. And you can do that wherever in the world you are. And I know that we've got listeners in California. I know that we've got listeners in Europe. I know that we've got listeners in Australia and across New Zealand. Welcome to The Resilient Show. Very excited this morning. At last, we have got Nick Manarangi, who is joining us at around about 10 o'clock. And Nick and I are going to be talking about a sense of belonging. We're going to talk about what it means to be secure in our past. And Nick really only came to this after he had lived overseas and came home and started researching his roots, his ancestry. So today's show is entitled Belonging, and it is dedicated to everyone who is seeking where they belong. It's an interesting time in the world at the moment. Whether you are a royalist or not, we have just seen the end of a life dedicated to service. A life that, you know, wasn't ever meant to be like that. Elizabeth wasn't meant to be the Queen when she was born, but things change, don't they? We all know that. Things change. And she became queen on the death of her father. And since that day, since she committed to that life of service, we have seen a life of service like nothing many of us have experienced or will ever experience again. The Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst's motto is serve to lead. And that was exemplified by Queen Elizabeth II throughout her reign. And I, for one, believe that that will be the intention of our new king, King Charles III, to continue that theme of serving to lead. My view, it's, and if you've read Lead Through Life, it's the only way to lead. Service is the culminating principle of leadership. If we are serving, then we are being true leaders. Unfortunately, when we look out into the world at the moment, we often see people in leadership positions who are desperate for the power. Well, if you're desperate for the power, that is your ego. That means that it is all about you. And leadership was never meant to be all about the individual. Leadership is all about the people who we are leading. That was what the Queen exemplifies. That is what her memory will be. That is a standard that we should all live up to. Whether or not we agree with monarchies doesn't really matter. Let us remember a woman who was thrust into that spotlight, into that position, and took the responsibility seriously and kept that responsibility throughout the rest of her life. Okay, time to change the music up a bit. Here's something a little bit more upbeat.
I got this feeling
inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it, moving so phenomenally. Come on, like the way we rock it, so don't stop. And under the lights when everything goes nowhere. When you dance, 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 feel good, good creeping up on you. So just dance, 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 come on. All those things I shouldn't do, but you dance, dance, dance. And ain't nobody leaving soon, so keep dancing. I can't stop the feeling. So just dance, dance, dance. I can't stop the feeling. So just dance, 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 come on. Ooh, it's something magical. It's in the air, it's in my blood, it's rushing on. I don't need no reason, don't be control. I fly so high, no ceiling when I'm in my zone. Cause I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it, moving so phenomenally. You're more like the way we rock it, so don't stop, stop.
Justin Timberlake, Can't Stop the Feeling. Those trolls jumping around about the place never could do that dance, even though the kids tried to teach me. Nope, didn't quite get that one at all. So belonging, a sense of belonging. Do you have one? Do you sometimes have one? I do hope so. I was thinking back when I was putting this show together, when I knew that Nick was coming on and what we were going to talk about. I also interviewed another guest of the show a couple of weeks ago about belonging, because both of them have agreed to be a part of my next book, and they are in the introduction piece to part two of the book, which is all about, oddly enough, belonging. The book working title is Unstoppable You. And we're talking about certainty, belonging, and returning. So, to belong, what does that actually mean? I was thinking back to the first time that I really felt I belonged somewhere. And as I do with any of my clients when we do some of this work, you got to go back further than you think. Because my easy answer, my first answer, was the day that I got my letter to say that I had a place on the commissioning course at the Royal Air Force College at Cranwell. And I suddenly thought, wow, I'm going to belong to the Royal Air Force. I'm going to belong in a light blue uniform. And as I tracked it back, I could link that to my family. My father was in the Royal Air Force Reserves. My grandfather was a navigator during World War II. Light blue flowed through the family, so it made sense that I joined that service. For those of you who know, I didn't last that long. 5 years later, I transferred across to the British Army. But even before then, I had a sense of belonging. I was a Boy Scout. I was a Cub Scout. And every Tuesday evening, I would put on my green jumper and my green cap with the yellow piping on it. I would scrub my nails to make sure that they were clean for inspection. And off I would go to Cubs. The 16th Glasgow Cub Pack was my Cub Pack. And I then went on from there to Scouts. I then went on to form the Venture Scouts with 16th Glasgow Scouts. That was where I belonged in the early stages of my life. And I can look back at it and know that it was belonging, but it was also leadership. It was an opportunity to help other boys in the village from which I was dragged to become more of themselves. Every Remembrance Day, the 11th of November, we would form up at the Roman Catholic Chapel in the village and we would march to the Church of Scotland church in the village. We belonged. We were part of that community. That's what human beings need. And I mean need. We don't choose to belong. We need to belong. We can choose where we belong, and we should do that. And we'll talk to Nick about that, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later on in the show. But we need to belong. If you pick up the Bible, I actually asked this question at a workshop we did the other day, and I was quite surprised the number of people who put their hand up and said, yeah, I've read the Bible. But if you start at the beginning of the Bible, it is about a relationship. One man with his God. And then a woman arrives, and it's a relationship of a couple. That couple then have children, and it's the relationship of a family where they belonged. That family over time joined other families and became the 12 tribes of Israel. They became families of families. That's what a tribe is. It's a family of families. And later still, they decided it was time for nationhood. It was time for kings. But they belonged. They belonged in that family. They belonged in that tribe. They belonged in their nation. The counter to that is when we begin to fit in. And we fit in because we are afraid of what is on the other side of the border. The other side of the fence, because those are the tribes that maybe we didn't share the stories with. We didn't share stories with those tribes. They had their own stories and we didn't like their stories. So we're going to stick with our stories and you can go over there and we're going to come over here. That's how it all starts, guys. And because humanity wanted kings, that's what we were given. That was the beginning of monarchies. Way, way back. Yeah, way, way back in the Old Testament, we hear of kings, some good ones, some bad ones. And that really has come to the fore over recent weeks as we have seen the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. That's where we find where we belong. Too often, it's about fitting in, though, isn't it? Too often, it's about, well, I've got to fit in. I'll squeeze myself out of shape because that's the way things have got to be. We stay in unhappy relationships because we are frightened of leaving them. There is a vulnerability that comes from understanding where we truly belong. And we've been taught that vulnerability isn't right. We've been taught we shouldn't be vulnerable. We've been taught that, well, if we just all gang up together, we'll all be fine. Well, yeah, unless that's not where you belong. We must be brave and understand where we belong. Conformity is a thing that is necessary sometimes, but we'll come back to that after this track, because really when I look at this track tells a story from before my life began, but it is a story of 2 years after a big global event called the Summer of Love. The next track's called The Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams, but that Summer of Love in 1967, when people began to think differently. They began to break out of that post-World War II conformity and thought, we can do things a little bit differently. I'm quite sure some good stuff's come out of the Summer of Love. I'm quite sure some bad stuff has come out of it. But without doubt, what did come out of the Summer of Love was an opportunity to choose where we belonged, to break up that need to fit in. Here's Bryan Adams.
I got my first real six string, bought it at the Five and Dime. Played it till my fingers bled. Was the summer of 69. Me and some guys from school had a band and we tried real hard. Jimmy quit, Jody got married. Should've known we'd never get far.
Yeah.
Summer of 69 by Brian Adams. What a good track. That was, yeah, just, I really went for just sort of random music today when I put the show together. I just thought, right, what do I fancy playing? And it's meant that, well, yeah, you've seen it. We had Thank You for the Music, we've had Can't Stop the Feeling, and now we've had Summer of 69. And it will continue, but don't worry, we will still be playing Mr. Tim McGraw. In fact, we're going to play Mr. Tim McGraw next after this segment. So where do you belong? Where does it happen for you? I do hope that there is somewhere in your life when you do where you do belong. As I often do, before I put the show, when I start recording the show, put the show on, before I started recording the show, I record podcasts. And if you're interested, the podcast is the Resilient Podcast. You can find it. It's on Spotify. Other streaming services are available. You can just take a look if you just take a look for any of the stuff about, you know, my stuff on the internet, www.stewdarling.com. You'll find access to it. But I was doing a podcast about truth this morning. We're working our way through the alphabet of resilience in the podcast, and we got as far as the letter T today. I recorded T and U today. U for uniqueness, but T was truth. And the conversation I had about truth was our ability to look in the mirror and see the truth. Whoa, how scary is that? Sometimes when we look in the mirror, we don't quite like what we see, do we? Maybe our eyes are a little bit bloodshot. Maybe, you know, there were a few too many pies or custard donuts over the weekend and you can see it. Maybe we're not as healthy as we would like to be. That's the truth. The truth is what we see when we look in the mirror. That is the reflection of what we see. And if we don't like what we see, then we go and try and find satisfaction elsewhere. We go and try and find satisfaction in the world around about us. It might be that bigger television. It might be that holiday. It might be that relationship. It might be that next bottle of wine or that next beer or whiskey. We look for those places for a sense of belonging. The latter ones we look for in order to hide, to dull the pain of not belonging somewhere. Try it. Go and look in the mirror. I talk about it in the book Lead Through Life. Go and look in the mirror and see. Here's the challenge for you today. Go and look in the mirror and see if you can say, I love you, to the person looking back. I truly hope you can, but I also realise that this is a big ask. For many of us, this is a huge ask to look in the mirror and say, I love you, to the person looking back. If that's a bit of a struggle, have a look. Have a look and find something that you like about the person looking back. It might be the sparkly blue eyes. It might be the hairdo. It might be something that you're wearing. Whatever it is, find that little thing and say, I like that. I like that about me. And over time, look for the next thing, the next thing. And in time, you'll be able to say, I like what I see. That is the stepping stone to being able to look in the mirror and say, I love you, to the person looking back. Why is this important? Because if we are able to look at the face in the mirror and say, I love you, then we truly belong. We already belong in this world. We belong to something so much greater than our family, our community. We belong to the world. We and the world are nothing more than energy moving at different speeds. The whole quantum model piece. And if we can look in the mirror and say, I love you, then we are operating at the highest level of energy that the human being can operate at. And that means that we truly belong. It means that you can go anywhere in this world, anywhere, into any room, into any building, into any environment, and you will belong. That's how cool this is. It all starts with internal work. And once the internal work is done, the external work becomes so much easier. Now, after this next track, I am very, very excited. Now, I am truly excited because I know that Nick is already on the call. So during this next track, I'm going to have a quick chat to Nick. And then when we come back, Nick and I are going to talk about his journey to understanding where he belongs. But before we get there, as promised, from the TV program Yellowstone, this is The Cowboy in Me by Mr. Tim McGraw.
I don't know why I act the way I do. I ain't got a single thing to lose. Sometimes I'm my own worst enemy. I guess that's just the cowboy in me. I got a life that most would love to have. Oh, but sometimes I still wake up fighting me. And with this road I'm headed down might lead, I guess that's just the cowboy in me. The urge to run, the restlessness, the heart of stone I sometimes get. The things I've done for foolish pride, the me that's never satisfied, the face that's in the mirror when I don't like what I see. I guess that's just the cowboy in me. The heart of stone I sometimes get. The things I've done for foolish pride, the me that's never satisfied, the face that's in the mirror when I don't like what I see. I guess that's just the cowboy in me. Girl, I know there's times you must have thought there ain't a line you've drawn I haven't crossed. But you set your mind to see this love on through. I guess that's just the cowboy in you. Here I'd never worry about the fall. I guess that's just the cowboy in us all.
There was a proper country and western twang at the end of that one, wasn't it? That was Tim McGraw and his version, or the version used in the TV program Yellowstone. If you haven't watched it, go for it. I'm about four episodes in at the moment and I'm really enjoying it. Now, as I said before the break, when I press this button, we should have Nick on the call. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. Good morning.
You do not know how much that excites me when there's actually a voice at the other end of the call. Welcome to the Resilient Show. Nick, how's your morning? How's it going?
Fantastic. I'm currently sitting in the office. I don't usually come in on a Tuesday. It's usually Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But you know what? I get a lot more done when I'm actually in the office and I'm in work mode. So I decided to come in this morning.
It is fascinating, isn't it? The whole work from now. I do work from home because my office is at home. But it is fascinating that sometimes working from home you get lots done, but sometimes moving away from that home environment allows you to get more done, doesn't it?
I think it's just a bit of a switch, you know. Like I come in here. There isn't a pile of washing. There isn't a fridge full of things. There isn't a cupboard with chocolate biscuits inside it. So you know, it's much better for my mental state as well, being in there.
Totally. And just a complete aside, when we were chatting months ago and you decided to stop drinking, that was during lockdown. Is that still a thing, or are you back enjoying the sauce?
I'm back, but there's been a real funny one. And if there's anyone out there who's a medical expert that can kind of explain this phenomenon that's happening, but I seem to, and I think it's a result of me going off like 6 months without the alcohol and then going back into it. Whenever I get past like the second beer, I start having a bit of a migraine.
Ah. That's probably quite handy.
That's probably quite handy, the body telling me, hey, you know, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. So I did Dry July as well. So for those listening, last year, 1st of August was my last beer, and I didn't pick one up until just after Christmas. And, you know, it was through lockdown, so it was typically high time for alcohol sales to be going through the roof.
Yep.
But me and my partner stuck strong to our kaupapa and made it all the way through. And I think that's actually changed something in my brain.
Yep.
I think something's happened there where I've, all throughout my life, I've enjoyed a wee drink, particularly after work. You know, the habits kind of kick in work. You know, you've had a great day, have a drink. You've had a crap day, you have a drink.
I'm with you, man. Yeah, I understand. Yep.
Consistently inconsistent, but I think someone who can actually shed some light on this. But look, you know, every time I have a beer now, usually get past the second one and then I stop. And that's all because, you know, it's a bit of a migraine going.
Which is great. I mean, you and I spoke in the past, and you know, my 28-year drinking session that came to an end with my the 333 challenge. And I now find that I enjoy a drink, but I'm no longer a person who. I'm a person who drinks at the weekend. So, come Sunday evening, it's fairly straightforward. It's, Stu, you don't drink on a Sunday, so just don't. And it's fascinating how the brain, over that period of time, in whatever form, whether it's giving you stinking headaches or whether it's just you don't do that anymore, how we can actually shape our brains in order to lead a better life. Anyway, that's this often happens, Nick. We go down rabbit holes. That's not actually why you're on the show today. I think it's a really neat, really fascinating part about our opportunity to make decisions in our lives about who we choose to be. You're on the show because the title of the show is Belonging. We had a brief conversation about the work you have done to understand you and your past. I want to go all the way back to not all the way back, but back to the Nick before he left New Zealand to go travelling and go and work in London, go and work overseas. Who was he?
You know, I admire that guy in some respects because he didn't really think too much, which is his downfall as well, right? He was, you know, flying by the seat of his pants. Just, you could drop that guy in anywhere, jungles, you know, cities, and he would be fine because he didn't know what he didn't know, And I suppose he hasn't been tainted by experience. You know, it's that double-edged sword, right? You get older, you get wiser, you get older, you become, you overthink too much. You know, as you get older, as you're younger, you're just this kind of smash the door down type of go get him type of person who mm-hmm. I was.
Yep.
You know, leaving this country, and I suppose to understand why I left and thousands more like myself, I suppose it's kind of playing out at the moment, although I don't know how true the rumors are with the young ones
mm-hmm.
fleeing to go overseas. But anyway, take us back to around about the 90s
mm-hmm.
and politically I've got no idea what was going on, but the vibe around me and my friends and my age group and many other people of that age, around that teenage, early 20s age, was let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Okay, so the brand name for us was the Brain Drain,
mm-hmm.
right? So yep. I was part of that whole let's get out of here, last one out, turn the lights off, this country's going nowhere,
yeah.
you know, doom and gloom, da 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 da. So I didn't actually get away till the early 2000s until I saved up some money to get out of here to go to Sydney.
Yep.
Where I had a lot of friends over there, and the whole idea was to save up that money to eventually get to London. You know, it's mm-hmm. like the OE paradise. I don't know if it still is, but it's the place where, you know, the roads are paved with gold. The land of milk and honey.
Mm-hmm.
And my little stint over in Sydney showed me, wow, you know, there's a lot more going on, you know, over in Sydney than there is over here in Auckland. So, you know, I was in a job that I hated. My friends were in jobs that they hated. our hourly rates were pretty low. I can't even remember how much it was, but you know, there was never enough money. I think it goes, there's never enough money in the week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's how the saying yep. goes. Never enough money in the week for me to get by, to have the life that I wanted to, which at that stage was really enough money to go partying, buy a nicer car, and have disposable income.
Yeah.
Which is what Australia affords us. When we land there, we're like, oh my God, we've got all this money.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of set me up to be in a bigger city, be around other people, be in a faster paced place, you know, a lot more disposable income, and kind of prepare me for when I got into London. Because when I got into London, it was like, holy hell.
I must say, you're having done it the other way around. You moved from just outside London we would visit relatively frequently, and you're having visited other big cities across this here planet Earth. Even moving to Auckland, yeah, Auckland's as busy as it gets in New Zealand, but it still ain't busy, is it?
No, definitely not. You know, and it's I think pre-pandemic there were like pockets of busyness where I'd go mm-hmm. into the city for a meeting and you could kind of feel a bit of a vibe.
Yeah.
You know, especially when a ship is just coming.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Ponsonby on a Friday night is absolutely heaving.
Right. Okay.
But that's I'll one remember road, that. Right?
Yeah.
but that's one road, right? And then I'm sure if you travel down a couple of roads off Ponsonby, it'll be completely dead again. So there's, you know, pockets around Auckland where at the right time it does feel like you're in a like an international city, and mm-hmm. and so, Auckland is not. Yeah.
So how long did you spend in Sydney before you jumped on the kangaroo flight?
I was there for 2 years.
Wow. Okay.
I was kind of at the point where I was thinking I could actually live here forever. You know, the mm-hmm. the weather's good, the money's good, I've got some friends. But no, I stuck to my guns, and I thought, look, if I don't go now, I'll probably end up. So I was thinking about buying furniture and TVs and stuff, right?
Because come on, that's settling down, man.
That's settling down, and I was 25 at the time, and I'm like, there's no way I can settle down at 25. I don't want to go and buy a couch. I was actually walking past this furniture store, going, that's a really nice couch, and I thought, oh shit, sorry for swearing already.
That's right, don't worry.
I thought, I don't know, I'm turning into an old person.
That's brilliant. So because you saw that couch and thought that's quite nice, you got on an aeroplane and headed off to the big smoke.
The Big Smoke. I did 1 month around Thailand and did the whole Thailand thing. Had plans of going over to Bali and Vietnam and everything like that, but I was spending too much, and you weren't earning anything. And I was like, I need to actually jump on that plane and get out of here. Did a bit of a stint in Dubai. Had some. So around that time, the islands and all this other stuff was going on, and I thought, oh, I'm going to go over there and earn some money. They got lots of money. I went into Dubai, hated it. For a whole bunch of reasons, but jumped on a plane from there and then ended up back in London. So there was always going to be a stopover in Dubai, and I thought maybe I could have a couple of months there, but I ended up just going over to London after that.
I think Dubai is a very, very interesting melting pot, isn't it? I mean, yeah, it really is the melting pot of civilizations these days. I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with Dubai, because when I used to fly up country in my military days, I'd be flown into Dubai and I'd disappear into the back streets and go and sit with the locals to brush up my local languages before I then flew into Afghanistan. But yeah, when you then see the other side of Dubai, it's quite a cultural shift, isn't it?
Yeah. So do you speak Arabic?
I used to speak enough to get by. I used to speak enough to know if my interpreter was lying.
Well, that's quite a lot then.
There's a whole other call. We could do a whole show on that stuff, but not today. But no, I mean, I used to make sure that wherever I deployed to, I knew enough of the language, enough of the words to know if the question I was being asked was being translated correctly, so that I could, for mine and my team's safety. But that's one of the experiences in Dubai. The other experience is all the lovely jewelry that the Lady Elizabeth has, but yeah, that's another one. Anyway, we digress. You got to London at last.
Got there at last, and it was freezing cold. So you've gone from Thailand to Dubai, and Dubai in around that time, which I didn't know about, was the hot season where everyone leaves Dubai and goes to London because it's cooler there. So it was absolutely boiling, stinking hot, 45 degrees every day. And when I got into London, it probably was only about 10.
Yeah,
it felt like negative. It felt like negative 30.
Yeah, and grey.
And grey.
Yeah.
And
damn.
You know, at that age, going from Thailand drinking every day to Dubai not drinking at all, and then being dropped into London and getting back on that kind of partying vibe. You know, the socializing thing and being introduced to a huge network of friends immediately. Because all the Kiwis and Aussies all hang out to it together. It felt like, you know, I was part of something. I was part of the crew, a crew.
Okay, interesting. You say a crew. Did you feel that you belonged as soon as you landed in there, or was it just, were you still unconscious of that whole concept of do I fit in, do I belong?
I belonged in the crew.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for those that have not been to England or to Britain, you know, even though we speak the same language, that's about as far as the similarities go, eh? In terms of, you know, being able to connect with someone from that island, from that part of the world.
You speak such truth there. I mean, we spent 3 years living in Canada. We've spent the best part of a decade living in New Zealand now. And we got hoodwinked on both occasions. You think it's the same language. That's fine. I'm just going to, we'll just get on with it because it's the same language you're talking. Actually, the similarities between Great Britain and France or Spain or name another country, even though there is a different language, are closer than the relationship between UK and Canada, or the UK, New Zealand, and I'm sure Australia is similar. That language almost creates a barrier rather than breaks it down.
What were you
doing in London?
First got a job selling. So my whole career as I was in Sydney as well was advertising sales.
Mm-hmm.
So it was contract publishing to a advertising media company in London.
Yep.
And you know, just the differences. I'm just kind of thinking back now. The differences between our office culture in Sydney, which was the radio on, you know, a positive kind of uppy vibe,
mm-hmm.
People chatting to each other. To, like, I'm sure you've seen The Office.
Oh yes, indeed.
And you know, and I that came out many, many years after I started working there. But it's just a copy and paste of what mm-hmm. what The Office was like when I was in there. So no one actually spoke to each other. I sat next to somebody, you know, and I said hello to them, and that was pretty much it, because I couldn't get anything out of that person for the duration that I was there. I didn't last at this company very long.
Right.
I was only there for like 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
But just, yeah, like, you know, in Sydney we'd have like shared lunches and stuff.
Yeah.
Or we'd all go to the curry house, and then we'll bring back our curries and sit around in the office and talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But that just wasn't a thing in that office, in the yeah. office that I was in first. Yep. So I just thought it was just that office, but apparently it just wasn't the thing to do.
No. Indeed, there is. Well, I mean, you know, we've seen it over. We've seen it over the last 10 days, and I know the last 10 days in the UK has been, you know, a period of national mourning. But you see that stiff upper lip, that stiff collar, actually is a part of European culture, is part of British culture, and I think that's one of the great things about those individuals who broke away from Britain, and I include myself in that, those that went and decided, actually, we're going to be pioneers, we're going to live elsewhere. You went and discovered that lifestyle in London. How long did you last in London?
10 years.
Okay, so you're over that 10 years, you lived, and we're going to accelerate, because I'm excited to hear about what happened to you when you came back to New Zealand, and what all of those lessons over that, what, 12-year period that you were away, led you to become. But before we get there, we're going to jump in with a piece of music, which was chosen at random by me, but I think it actually probably signifies some of the stuff you got up to while you were overseas.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We will come back in a minute after we've listened to Steppenwolf and Born to Be Wild.
Wow.
And whatever comes our way, yeah, gotta go make it happen. Take the world in a loving place. Buy all of the guns and pumps and explode into space. I like smoking lightning, heavy metal thunder, racing with the wind, and the feeling that I'm. Yeah, gotta go make it happen. Take the world in a loving embrace. Buy all of the guns and what's in. Explode into space. Like a true nature's child, we were born, born to be wild. We can climb so high. I never wanna die. Born
Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf. As I say, yeah, the tracks were random for today's show, but that really seemed to fit into the lifestyle that my guest Nick was living in Sydney and then London. Welcome back, Nick. You still there?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Excellent. I can now. Yeah, I just pressed the wrong button. It happens sometimes. Welcome back. So you parted your life away. You realised that office work in the UK was maybe not quite as exciting as office work in Sydney. I'm sure you had an amazing decade, but what caused you to decide to head back to New Zealand?
Children.
Okay. They don't have them in the UK?
No, there are millions of children in the UK. It's just that when we had children in the UK, things, so, you know, you're living a certain way, you know, you're living a certain way over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the kids come along, obviously life changes.
Yep.
And, you know, the little boxy one bedroom place that we had just wasn't cutting it. So we went off and, you know, paid a little bit more for like a two-bedroom place with a little garden out the back, which is actually quite rare for a lot of my friends anyway, to have like a little garden out the back of the house. So yeah. Then we're starting to think to ourselves, I've been there for 10 years. My wife had been there for about 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're thinking, how about we go give New Zealand a try? It was either going to be New Zealand or the Netherlands. And my wife really liked the idea because she'd come down here.
Mm-hmm.
Albeit during summer when it's like, you know, where the weather's really good.
Yeah.
And she absolutely loved it, loved the lifestyle, loved the relaxedness with, you know, the people down here. And then we decided to give it a go.
So,
New Zealand.
The Netherlands?
I'm a West Dutch.
Ah, okay. Not just because it's flat and there's windmills there. Right.
And they've got, you know, great cheese and everything. But no, yeah, because she's Dutch.
Right. Okay. Wow. That's a commitment. Moving all the way. So you moved back. What did you What had you been back at all while you'd been overseas?
Yes, I came back 3 times.
Okay.
Yes, so 3 times within that time, I came back 3 times.
So when you committed to returning to New Zealand, and you came back, what were your first impressions of the country that you'd left, over a decade previously?
I mean, you know, we got back in summer, so there was the same type of thing what we would do during that Christmas period. I suppose when it started getting to the point where we got to like find a place to live and all that sort of thing. Then as everybody who's come back from a long stint overseas will probably agree with there's lots of differences, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of the culture that you've left to the culture that it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, I was talking before how, you know, the office culture and everything wasn't very good, but you're so used to certain things overseas.
Yep.
Like, just from the simple things as like signing up for stuff or you know, getting your power done or ordering something on Amazon and it's going to be arriving there tomorrow.
Yeah.
All of those things.
Yes.
All of those things take a long time to get used to.
Totally. Yeah. So I chuckle. I use Book Depository to get most of my books that for reading, and I try and order them so that I've got a program of reading, and then nothing arrives for 8 weeks, then they all arrive the next day. So yes, I am. I know where you're coming from. But so once you became you sold your little your two-bed place in the UK, and I don't know, what did you buy when you came to New Zealand? Northland or something. And you got back into the Kiwi culture. Talk to me about, share with us that decision or that realization that there was some work to do to understand who Nick really was versus the Nick that left New Zealand years ago.
Yeah, it's a good question because I soon realized, probably within the first year, that I was I wasn't being myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd lived overseas and you know, as chameleons, some people who are chameleons, they kind of adapt and change the way they think and even change the way they speak.
Yep.
Being in sales, so using my voice to convince someone to buy something, right, is the number one weapon or the number one asset that I've got.
Yeah.
All right. So the mannerisms and the little, enunciating different things, like all of that I had developed over 10 years.
Yes.
And now that I'm back in this country, I had to get rid of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I had to just bury everything that in the way I communicate to people. I had to really find out who I was.
Right.
So that I could be my true self.
Uh-huh.
If that makes sense.
Oh, totally. So how take us
through the journey.
Take us on a truncated journey to finding who you is.
Okay. So to truncate it all down in 5 minutes, the answer that's really helped me has been my reo Māori journey.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? So when you go on a te reo Māori journey, you know, whether you're Pākehā, Chinese, doesn't matter what you are, Māori, one of the first things is we introduce ourselves not from, you know, hi, my name is Nick, like the Western world does it, but it's more along the lines of no hoki anga hau, he uri tēnei, no ngāti kahu, ngā puhi, i te tahu tōku māma, i te tahu tōku pāpā, no rarotonga, no haina, no ingarani, no airani. So you know, it's first of all, on my mum's side, I'm a descendant of the tribes that I've just mentioned in the north, and on my father's side, I'm a descendant of Rarotonga, as well as China, as well as Ireland, right?
Do you not have relations to a whaler from Nova Scotia or somewhere in North America as well?
Yeah. So you know, you know, when we get into, I suppose, and you really have to pick and choose your times when you're doing all this stuff, right? So if it's just like a greeting of me and you, you know, first off. I might go into all of that, but you really have to pick and choose. So William Hoard, who's from a wealthy family in Virginia, was a whaler that came down here, and then he decided not to jump back on the boat again, and he somehow married a very high-ranking chiefess called Te Oki in the north.
Yep.
And from that line is many different rangatira from that as well. Even Whina Cooper, if you know Whina Cooper, is those that are listening.
Mm-hmm.
That American whaler is Whina Cooper's great granddad.
I think one, and this I had a conversation with someone else about belonging, and what came through was that when Pākehā meet folks, the first question is, what do you do? Rather than, where are you from? And I think, for me, that really is a big, big shift, because where are you from is asking truly about Nick. It's truly asking about that individual. Whereas, what do you do is an ego question. I think. Thoughts?
Oh, I think it'll be very difficult to change other cultures to start talking, because then they're opening up, right? They're being a little more vulnerable, perhaps, they're talking about some things. And, you know, people are quite skeptical as well up in Europe, right? They'll be like, well, what do you want to know that for? You know?
We did a workshop a couple of months ago, and we ended, and it was a workshop, and everyone in the room was, Pākehā descendant, whether they were born New Zealanders, everyone was white. And we ended up having the conversation about, well, how do you actually shift into away from an ego conversation towards a true conversation about one another? And the conclusion that I came to in the room when I was thinking out loud was that you're trying to, you know, for me to turn around and say, you know, to try and give the Scottish version of, you know, how you shared your ancestry, it well, you know, one, it wouldn't quite work. I mean, I could talk about the mountains and the rivers, and the, you know, I could do that side of things, but then am I not stealing your culture?
Talking about, well, you know, when, well, not really, because you can talk about the mountains and the rivers or where your ancestors were from, but that's a big difference, us talking about our mountains and our rivers, because we see our mountains as and rivers as living, breathing organisms.
Perfect. Great.
So we are from that land and that river, and they are like our grandparents, and we need to look after that that mountain and that river.
So there's two questions that flow from that statement, and I'll try and remember what the second one is after I've asked the first one. What has this journey meant for you, and what has it meant for your family now that you have that deeper understanding of where you came from, where you come from?
Well, the thing is, by going on this journey, I've actually gained a lot more confidence because I know where I'm from. I know, you know, like I always tell people, if it's good enough for royalty to go back like 4,000 years of genealogy, right? If you go get William or Harry, and they could probably recite all of the, you know, all their bloodline back.
Yep.
If they can't, then all they need to do is walk into one of their houses and see the pictures of all their ancestors.
Yes, true.
Right, and go, well, that's Sir this one, the third, and like if it's good enough for them to know deeply all of their whakapapa, then it's good enough. It's good enough for everybody else, right?
I think, yeah, it's a completely different take on, yeah, and look, you know, whether you're a royalist or a monarchist or not, that's a very, very different conversation, and one that I don't think is necessary at the moment, considering what we've just seen over the last 24 hours. But yeah, I think that maybe if we all did take more interest in our ancestors, in our past, then do you feel that we would, that the world would be a better place? There we go. Let's just go for the big question.
Let's go for the big one. I suppose it's got to be intrinsic to the person to want to know that stuff. You know, so are they going to have a transformation as what I'd have? I'd like to say so. Yes, I'd like to say yes. But going back in, yeah, look, it's just given me so much confidence, like knowing people's names and you know, I'm standing on their shoulders, if you like.
Yeah,
I'm standing on those guys who have fought and you know, went to war or you know, started a family. It's just a really nice, humbling experience to know that, hey, that's where I've come from.
Totally. And what do you think it could mean for New Zealand if more of us engaged in this work?
I would hope it would make people more humble by knowing that you're great. So let's look at Pākehā New Zealand, right?
Yep.
And a lot of them, Pākehā New Zealanders, come from missionaries. Right. So missionaries came over on the boats, you know, spreading their gospel.
Yep.
And there's quite a lot of history in all of those different religious aspects. So if someone who's religious, who's wants to go on this journey and learn about their whakapapa, it's actually going to help them understand more about what their ancestors did when they come over here. So where I'm from, up in the north, there was the first Roman Catholic service. There was the first Wesleyan mission house.
Yep.
The Church of England's in there somewhere, of course. So Roman Catholic. There was Irish Catholic, which are very different. Mm-hmm. So where I'm from on the northern side of Hokianga Harbour is a very staunch Roman Catholic people. So my mum's side are very staunch Roman Catholic.
Right.
And Pompellier, I don't know if you know the name Pompellier. He was one of the one of the missionaries that came over. He's mm-hmm. actually buried. He's actually buried in the Hokianga.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. So I forgot what your question was now. Do you think it's going to help others if they go on this journey?
Do you think, yeah, if more of us went on this journey, and I'll share my thought, but more of us go on this journey, do you think it's an opportunity for New Zealand to grow as a nation, I suppose?
I'd say so. I can't see any negatives that would come out of this. Of course, there might be like trauma and stuff, you know. Some families, but
I'm completely with you. And I mean, I think you know, if that, and I've already spoken about the show before. Before you joined us this morning, that you know, our ability to know ourselves means that it gives us, as you've mentioned, it gives us the confidence to be our true selves. And there can't be anything better than all of us understanding our true uniqueness in the world. And of course there is going to be trauma, and we're seeing that across the world at the moment as we begin to understand what history actually was rather than the narrative of the victor. So there is going to be trauma, but if we lean into that trauma, then we come through the other side of it as stronger individuals, stronger communities, and as a stronger nation. And when I say a stronger nation, I mean everyone across the country has, celebrates their heritage, but recognizes that we must grow together.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow. There we go. So we went from a headache because of drinking two beers all the way to solving a nation's woes. Nick, it has been a joy having you on the Resilience Show this morning. I've really enjoyed our chat, and thank you for your vulnerability. Thank you for sharing. You chose a piece of music. Please introduce a piece of music and tell me why you chose it.
Kia Mo by Aro. It's a bit of a cheesy song.
Okay.
So ka whiti tera i runga i te katoa. So the sun will shine down on everyone. Ka ua te ua te i runga i te tangata. So the rain's also going to fall on everybody as well. Mm-hmm. Aha ko ko wai, aha ko ko wai, aha ko no hea. No matter who you are, no matter where you're from, aha ko ona whakaaro rereke i oku ake. Doesn't matter if you have different opinions to mine. And then it goes on, kia mo ki te rongo, be strong in listening, kia mo ki te aroha, be strong in your heart, kia mo ki te whakarongo, be strong when you're listening, and then you'll understand.
Perfect.
So it's one of those cheesy ones, but I like it.
Hey, look, those words, believing in who you are and having that strength is what we'll see every individual who listens and this nation onto whatever is next. Nick, thank you so much for your time this morning, and here is your track.
Thank you. Ka whiti tera i runga i te katoa. Ka ua te ua i runga i te tangata. Aha koa koai, aha koa nohea. Aha koa ona whakaro, ririke ki hoku ake. Umau ki te aroha, tēnei te rongoa. Kia maru ki te rongo, kia maru ki te aroha, kia kaha ki te whakarongo. Thank you.
How good was that? How good was that chat with Nick? Awesome. And very kindly, he has agreed that I can write that interview up and use it for part two of my next book. Wow. So to belong. I think something that Nick mentioned, and it is really, really important to recognise that when we do this deep work, when we decide to understand where we belong, and I mean where we belong in terms of our ancestry, trauma will come up. Probably in most cases, there's going to be a level of trauma that we have to face. When I decided to look into my family past, I did it because there was only one member of my father's generation left living. Fortunately, she still is. Auntie Linda, good morning. She, I went back to her and said, look, can you share some stories about my dad, his childhood, about your childhood together, and about his ancestors? And it really shocked Auntie Linda. She, you know, she said she got very emotional thinking back through her life and the lives of those before her. But we got to do this work. They say that we only survive two generations of memory. So if we don't start asking those questions of the older generations, it's lost. It's lost unless we do the work. Now, fortunately for monarchies, the work is done for them. But we can do that work. I found out that one of my uncles was given, when the father died, there were three sons. One of them was given the family furniture removal business. And it went bankrupt because he decided that horses were the way ahead, as the internal combustion engine was being brought into business. He made the wrong decision and ended up going bankrupt. Another of the sons who was given the money, one was given the business, one was given the money, one was given the house. In the will, the one that was given the money started the very first Scottish football pools for betting on football matches. Now, how cool is that? How cool a story is that, to know that that's what I've got three generations back in my family? That really gives me a grounding as to the sorts of people that I came from. When I think about the land that I was brought up in, the places I holidayed as a child, that gives me a firm grounding in the rivers of Scotland, in the mountains of the Cairngorms, where we holidayed. That tells me that I am part of a land that has a huge history in global history. You know, the Scots, the great Scottish diaspora, when the Scots were leaving because we didn't like the English at the time. You know, all of those stories enable me to belong. To belong within my family line. To belong within me. And that allows me to then go forward and take on the world on my terms. Not on other people's terms. It allows me to question and research the world, just as Nick has done since he came back from his extended trip to London. Have a go at it. Yeah, if you've got older generations who are still around, go and have conversations with them. Go and have conversations about where they went to school. Have conversations about their childhood. Some of the greatest fun that we have as serving soldiers is to talk to the old soldiers, and I'll share that story after a little bit of Marillion.
Thank you. break your heart. Please excuse me, I never meant to break your heart. So sorry, I never meant to break your heart. But you broke my heart.
That's taking us back a little bit. Well, that's the show nearly over. Nick and I got busy chatting about belonging and finding our place in the world, but I did want to finish off with just a, because I'm sure it happened at the end of the state funeral at the beginning of this week. Remembrance Day is such a great opportunity to catch up with old soldiers. I had the honour of hosting members of 617 Squadron, the Dambusters, as in the actual Dambusters, many years ago as a junior officer. Both the Lady Elizabeth and I were hosting the old airmen when we commemorated the 50th anniversary of the bombing of the dams. And the stories those old men and women had to share are great fun. They love sharing them. So take some time, find an older member of your family and ask them some questions. Get them to share your stories. Not only will you make an old man or an old woman very happy by showing interest in their past, you will also get an understanding of where you came from. You will truly begin to understand who you are, where you belong within the history of humanity. And if every single one of us did a little bit of that, the world, I believe, would become such a better place. Well, that's it, guys. We're about to overrun. That is the Resilient Show for this week. We're going to play out with Up Where We Belong. Who knew? Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warne. I will see you next time. Have a great day.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, the Top of the South's community access media station, with support from New Zealand On Air. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz.